After 4 years of work, James O'Byrne's Assume UTXO option to allow instant UTXO set bootstrapping for your Bitcoin node is merged into Bitcoin Core. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we've got a short read today on a tech update for the Bitcoin Core client. And this is just, it's a small thing and kind of the grand scale, but I think it will be big for the operation, for the day-to-day operation and how we treat Bitcoin nodes. I think this is kind of an area of innovation and an area of development that I think particularly the Core reference client and maybe even an example I use in the guy's take is Lightning sort of reference clients, like the base Lightning clients. There's like a couple of little things that I think still get in the way of that kind of like quick setup and just immediately start operating space that I also think is really important for kind of businesses and service provision that doesn't get a lot of development. That I think the reference client in particular in Bitcoin Core, and for very good reason, is treated as a don't think about user-facing features so much. This is about infrastructure. But I think there are some really cool developments that are not only on the horizon, but also kind of coming to fruition. And this is actually one of them that I think is a pretty big deal, specifically from the context of if you weren't going to run a full node or run the reference client before, now it might make a lot more sense to do so. Because the user experience gaps between the like super custodial sort of front-end user-facing stuff and the quote-unquote back-end foundation, I think the gap is starting to close. We're getting a lot more of the really solid tooling that lets you use the non-custodial, the more secure, the more complete and more sovereign options in a cleaner and faster way. So that's all the preamble I will give to this. This is another piece by Shinobi, which we've read a couple of pieces by him very recently, actually. But it's another one on Bitcoin Audible. And this is just a development that just got merged into Bitcoin Core. And I think it's cool. I think it's definitely worth talking about. A huge thank you to the Cold Card hardware wallet for keeping my Bitcoin safe. This is a super secure, crazy long-running, highly trusted builder in the space, CoinKite. They've been around for, like 2010, 2011. And the Cold Card is hands down just one of the best hardware wallets that is in the Bitcoin space. And if you do not have one yet, you got to get 9% off with my code, Bitcoin Audible, that they have for the listeners of this show. And when you get your Cold Card, this is the perfect thing to plug into Nodeless. So you set up an automatic withdrawal from your Nodeless. Nodeless is a front end to plug your life, your projects, your charity, your business, your online commerce, your WooCommerce store, all of these things into Bitcoin with no hassle. No, like the dirt simple setup. You don't have to manage channels. You don't have to do anything like that. Just use Nodeless, no subscription, no KYC. Just punch in an address from your Cold Card hardware wallet, and any payments that you receive over Lightning or Bitcoin will just automatically be aggregated and forwarded to your hardware wallet. And then, of course, the Fold debit card is going to pay you sats back on literally everything in your life. Everything, everywhere that I spend fiat, I get sats back. And I do gift cards at Amazon, all like tons of major merchants, and I get sats back there too. And then I send them all to my Cold Card. It's really kind of magical, all the different ways that I just kind of have sats flowing in, and they all go to my Cold Card, so I know I own them, I know they're safe and sound, and I sleep like a baby. Check them all out. Links, goodies, discounts, right there in the show notes. With that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, An Easier Way to Bootstrap Your Node's UTXO Set by Shinobi. After 4 years of work, James O'Byrne's Assume UTXO option to allow instant UTXO set bootstrapping for your Bitcoin node is merged into Bitcoin Core. Yesterday marks coming up to the finish line after almost 4 years of work. Assume UTXO was merged into the Bitcoin Core master branch by Andrew Chow yesterday. This is the first major non-consensus update to the Bitcoin reference implementation in quite a while, and is going to have a lot of interesting implications for users bootstrapping nodes. To give a little context about the feature, I think it'll be useful to give a little history lesson. When a Bitcoin Core node first turns on and starts syncing the blockchain, it doesn't actually validate the entire historical chain. It can, but it doesn't by default, the reason being to save time and resources when bootstrapping. It validates the entire set of blockchain headers to make sure the proof of work is valid, but it doesn't actually validate the signatures or other witness data for really old blocks. The logic is that for really old blocks, say 5 years old, it's overkill to actually verify and run through the signature and other witness checks for those blocks. If someone was able to mine an invalid block 5 years ago spending coins without a valid signature, then Bitcoin is essentially broken. Bitcoin Core used to skip validation on these old blocks with a hard-coded checkpoint. For example, developers would literally just include the block hash for a known valid block in the past directly into the validation code, and Core would not check witness data for anything before that. It was a very hacky solution, and it was not possible for users to change this behavior without actually modifying the source code to the client themselves. In 2017, Greg Maxwell introduced the Assume Valid function to deal with these issues. Instead of a hard-coded value in the source code, Assume Valid was a setting that could be modified on startup, where users could manually pass a block hash themselves and decide which block to start validating witness data at. Core still hard-codes a default block for this feature, but the key difference is now users can easily override that without modifying source code. Simply run bitcoind-assumevalid equals the block hash, and users can decide themselves what to validate or not. You can run it with assumevalid equals zero to validate every single block since Genesis. Assume UTXO brings a very similar functionality to handling the UTXO set. Everything your node does to verify the historical blockchain is done with the sole purpose of building the UTXO set. You can't really know if a transaction is valid unless you know if the coin has been spent before, and the UTXO set is the cache a node builds up to keep track of all the coins that haven't been spent. Users have put together many hacky tools in the last few years to simply skip ahead and start from a known good UTXO set from some point in time, most notably BTC Pay Server. These are all very ugly hacks, though, that essentially boil down to copy and pasting the file directory holding the UTXO set. Now that functionality will be supported in Bitcoin Core proper. The implementation James O'Byrne put together has implemented all the logic for importing and starting to use a UTXO snapshot, as well as tools to create one in the first place. Very much like Assume Valid, Assume UTXO will simply accept an existing snapshot file as an argument and load that into the user's node and start running from there. This will add a massive amount of flexibility to node operators, both on the end user side as well as businesses. Users can create a snapshot of their current UTXO set and store that somewhere. If their node ever crashes or any of the database is corrupt, they can simply grab that UTXO snapshot and restart their node from that block height instead of having to restart from the Genesis block. Users who have trusted relationships with each other can simply help one another start up a node from where things are now. No more blockchain syncing necessary at all. If you trust me, I can give you the current UTXO set from my node. And within a margin of a few hours worth of blocks, you can have a node up and running in no time. Businesses who have to run multiple nodes for different reasons can spin them back up much quicker and easier from UTXO snapshots. Now, this isn't quite ready to go live in the next Bitcoin Core release, but as James put it on Twitter, the hurdle to cross to get to that point is literally 5 lines of code. All of the core logic and implementation is merged. All that needs to be done is change some flags so that Core will allow users to make use of Assume UTXO when running their node on mainnet. So, congratulations to James on the merge. Many Bitcoiners are looking forward to having more flexibility and control over their own node. So a really cool security feature of the Cold Card hardware wallet that I am a big fan of is the BrickMe pin. So not only, you know, the Cold Card is really accessible, and you know I'm a huge fan of the NFC, so that I can just tap to sign when I'm using Nunchuck on my mobile. And honestly, hardware wallets have always been difficult to use with mobile, and I've almost universally just used them on desktop. But that's been the great thing about my Cold Card, Tap Signer, and Nunchuck wallet setup is that I use it natively. I just use it by default on mobile, and I just love the setup. But the cool thing about the BrickMe pin is that it's a way to, like, let's say you're under duress, let's say you've been kidnapped, you're being robbed, you went to a conference and you're being coerced, and, you know, that might sound silly, but this happens. There's a lot of stories. Jameson Lopp has actually collected a lot of stories of people dealing with situations exactly like this. The cool thing about the BrickMe pin is that it's a way to punch in a pin number that there's no indication as to whether this is the correct pin or not, and it essentially destroys the device. There's no way to recover. It wipes everything, and that Cold Card is useless. So if you have a backup seed at a different location and you're in a really high risk situation, you can punch in this pin and just wipe the Cold Card. And you know you can always just go back to your seed and recover it, and your access with the Cold Card is just gone. Another kind of really fun thing to do is take one of those little Cold Card cards that, like, where you keep your backup and stuff on it. Don't put your backup on it. Just write your pin number on it. Or better yet, take a marker and write your BrickMe pin number on the back of the Cold Card. Then if anybody ever stumbles upon it for some reason, or it ever gets stolen, and somebody tries to open it up, somebody's like, how convenient, the pin number is right here. I can steal all of this person's coins. They'll punch that pin number in, and the Cold Card will be wiped, and you never have to worry about it. It's that attention to detail that makes me love the Cold Card and CoinKite, because there's so many different options and little security features and ways to just know that your Bitcoin is secure under all circumstances. And that's what you get with the Cold Card. And you can get 9% off with code BitcoinAudible. Check it out. Go to the link in the show notes. And if you haven't gotten one yet, you definitely should. All right. So this is another, I wanted to hit this one just because this is a cool feature set for kind of bringing back the core implementation, or bringing back the full node, the reference implementation as a more viable user option. Now, see, a lot of times when you're booting up a full node, one of the big issues, like we talk about this with the Breeze SDK just in the last read, right, is that there's always a big UX trade-off. Like, if you want the best user experience, it's going to be custodial. You're going to lose sovereignty. You're probably going to lose privacy in some aspect, et cetera, et cetera. There's always just a trade-off, right? And one of the big things is I felt like we shouldn't just leave the reference implementation to those who want to do the super advanced version and the super slow version. And there's a lot of these other changes like this that will make it so that you can actually boot up a full node really, really fast and start kicking off, and there won't be such a loss. There won't be such a barrier. The initial blockchain download, syncing, and validation is a rough process, especially if you're doing it on an old laptop. You know, it takes 3 or 4 days sometimes to really go through if you don't have the proper computation. And sure, there's a trade-off in assuming the valid signatures for, you know, some transaction from, you know, 6 years ago, from 2010 or 2012 or whatever it is. But understand, all the amounts, all the addresses, every other rule set, it's simply the signatures. It's the witness data of, did the owner actually sign and provide a valid signature for this in order to, you know, put it into the main blockchain. So that's skipped for bootstrapping. But if we're talking about this, you know, a decade deep, like Shinobi said in this piece, if anybody is able to fake that with valid block headers and a valid UTXO history in the chain, Well, then Bitcoin's done. Like, something is fundamentally broken, because that's just not possible. The signature data isn't that important in the context of knowing that you're on the valid chain that is legitimately 13 years old or 14 years old. So in other words, that's an extremely small trade-off. And signature data is the least concerning when it comes to a lot of... That's why we went over to SegWit, is specifically because the signature data can be removed after validation, after you check it. It doesn't have to be stored if you know that the UTXO set, like what the signature was, after we know that it was correctly signing over the coins of any transaction, it doesn't have to be stored indefinitely. So you can have a pruned node that drops all of that and, you know, stores a, you know, 100,000 blocks or 210,000 blocks or whatever it is. And the bulk of the data, like a huge part of the data, is signature data. So you can just validate and then drop it. But the fact that we can now bootstrap a full node from a UTXO set, like this is a great example, actually, is myself. The reason I kind of get a little nerdy about this is because I have spun up a lot of nodes in my past, right? I have done the Bitcoin Core client on, I don't know, 10 times or so, various over the years as like main, as my main node. And then I have my Embassy Pro node, which was switched over from my Embassy One, the little like more Raspberry Pi device. I still have an Umbral on a Raspberry Pi, which is a full node. I have a full node, which is also the reference client on my Linux machine right now, though it's out of date. I haven't opened it in like 2 months because I've just been using my Embassy. But the big thing here is that I have to redo everything every time I do this. I even can manually put in the IP addresses of my other nodes, but I still have to I have to download all the block headers, all the blocks, all the transactions, do all the computation, do all the validation, check which address went where, and slowly build my UTXO set. When the UTXO set is what I need to just kick things off and get it going. So when I was setting up my full node on the Embassy Pro, there's no reason for me to have to do all of that again. There's no reason for me to have to wait 2 days to use my Embassy Pro. If I could just pull the UTXO set, just pull the assume UTXO function, see what they are from my other nodes, then I could have been off to the races almost immediately. And then when you combine this with something like UTreeXO, which is another really cool thing that should be coming at some point in the future, granted if this took 4 years to get it reliable and, you know, kind of up to the standard of the Bitcoin reference client, there's no telling how long UTreeXO takes, but it's basically a way to bootstrap an entire full nodes UTXO set without even downloading it. It's basically a hash. So kind of in the same way that Neutrino is block filters, this is a filter, this is a hash tree for the entire UTXO set, so you can actually know without a doubt that any address that comes in is in fact in the UTXO set and is spendable, even though all you actually have is a single hash, well, give or take, what is able to just prove that it is present so that you know it's a valid UTXO, you know it's a valid address and a valid Bitcoin balance that can be spent without having to download the whole UTXO set at all. So this would be, or at least you can do it before you even download the UTXO set. So a way to think about it is the degree of validation and the degree of cost to essentially knowing that what you are looking at live on the network is a valid transaction that can be accepted and taken as the truth while a deeper validation is occurring in the background. And so you've got the full blockchain download, all the validation, all the UTXOs, all the block hashes. That's, you know, X amount of computation. And then, X amount of time. And then if you just do the block headers, that's going to be like a tenth of X or a 20th of X. I'm not 100% sure. Then let's say you can download this, the UTXO set with assume UTXO, and you can just trust your other nodes. Or in my case, I can just trust that my Embassy Pro did all the work. And when I'm booting up on my local machine or I'm booting up on my Linux machine, I can just give it the UTXO set. Well, that's like a 10th or a 20th of doing all of the block headers. So I can let it do the block header validation while I'm already ready to go. But then the U3 XO would be even like a 10th or 20th of that. Like, and my ratios are all off. I'm just kind of pulling crap out of my ass. But it's just an example of how, like, you can just continually compress the information necessary to know you're at a valid state. And then you can just kind of back check if you're worried, or you want to verify that the other machine or the other device or the person that you are getting the UTXO set from or the U3XO root from has not cheated you, even though you're already in a situation where you kind of know that. But hey, you know, don't trust verify, do it again. But the thing is it doesn't stop you from going ahead and moving, connecting to the network, connecting to the hundreds of thousands of other nodes out there, and then operating with the reference client as if everything's good to go. Like you just have a live full node that's doing everything that it needs to do to be sovereign in the background, while you can just kick off, and now you have this huge set of features, or this level of sovereignty and this level of security that you can essentially back prove, while you don't have to be like, oh, well, I was going to download a full node, but then the mobile custodial client is just so much faster. You can start to get the sovereign version of it to operate at a faster and more responsive degree while still granting that sovereignty. This is a lot like, you know, kind of separating your keys from the node itself, which is what Greenlight and the Breeze SDK does, which is such a cool innovation. It's such a fascinating way to separate the infrastructure from the keys, and this allows that to Breeze SDK and the Greenlight setup allows you to spin up a full node instantly in the cloud, and it's never custodial. So this is just another great example of those kind of like back behind the scenes sort of implementation details and new features that are coming out that's just going to make it so much better. And it's going to make a full node more accessible and closer to on par, or start to behave more like the custodial, non-sovereign, non-private options. I mean, obviously not fully, but it's going to change that initial dynamic. It's not going to be like, oh, use a custodial right now, everything works, everything's cheap, or go full node and, you know, run a Bitcoin full node and Lightning client and, you know, wait 3 days for it to boot up, open up some channels, wait for that to set up, figure out how to get liquidity, et cetera, et cetera. You just totally, constantly closing that gap, knocking every single challenge out of the way. How do you do liquidity, LSPs? How do you offload the infrastructure for your mobile client so you can still hold your keys non-custodially, Greenlight? How do you get the UTXO set super fast? You use Assume UTXO and you just download a subset of the UTXO database from another node or from another person, and on, but it just increases the performance while allowing you to back verify and back secure the fact that you are a full node, you still validated the history, and you are on Bitcoin, and you're no longer trusting anyone else, but you can get there quicker and you can start operating today without having to boot it up and be like, wow, full nodes suck, I'm not doing this again, let me download Wallet of Satoshi. And, you know, I've always kind of had this back and forth in my mind about whether the reference client should be the one that kind of takes on part of that, or if it's the obligation of this kind of like middle, you know, like Embassy Pro is a good example. Is their nodes as a service? They're selling like a node machine to, you know, you can have your own mempool.space running, so you can have your own Block Explorer, which is one of my dominant uses of it, actually. And then you can plug it in with your Lightning, you can set up a Lightning node and do a multi-sig wallet, all the different things that you can do with having your own node and having your own dedicated computer that you know that is secure and is running all of this and doing all the validation for you. I've always wondered if, do we leave it entirely in that realm of let them come up with a standard for shortcutting the UTXO set or packaging it in such a way that I can transfer it from one Embassy suite to, or Embassy Pro to another Embassy Pro, or, you know, work it out with Umbral for a different client. But what's funny is that so many of them just, like, the foundation of all of this is the reference client. I feel like there needs to be a standard. a dominant means by which these tools are kind of built into the base layer. And it doesn't have to be all of the tools, obviously. We're not looking for like some huge user feature set. We're just looking for, can we boot it up quickly and get going on the Bitcoin network? And what does that look like? What's the experience like for those who want to be fully sovereign? And I think about it a lot like Bolt 12 and Lightning, is that a whole bunch of people were saying, oh, we should do Lightning address or you know, Lightning URLs and addresses on top of it. That's a client side thing. That's a service issue. And then the same thing with like kind of subscriptions. And this was a bit of a debate. There was some back and forth about what layer those things should be dealt with. But I just come across there needs to be some of those fundamental primitives. Subscription is a huge one. Recurring payment on Lightning. It can be entirely built in a push manner. I mean, it necessarily has to be built in a push manner because that's how the protocol works. But you need to be able to quote unquote subscribe to someone in your Lightning wallet, and it makes absolutely the most sense to not have these disparate standards. You know, one of the best things about the awful downside of centralization of like, you know, everything being through the Apple App Store, but one of the best things in my opinion about the App Store setup, when I'm like buying a subscription for like you know, one of the many, many apps that I have on my phone, which I completely forget about and don't manage very well, is just being able to go to the app set, like the dominant settings on the App Store or on iOS, and then go to subscriptions and I can just look at them. I mean, I just went and checked the other day because I realized I hadn't looked at it in a while, and I realized there was still a little media app, an editing app that was like $2.99 a month or something like that, that I had still been paying for like 3 months that I was no longer using. I'd switched over to CapCut, but there it was, and I could just cancel it. I didn't have to remember. I mean, I didn't remember that I was still subscribed to it, let alone remember what the name of it was, and that I would go to some address, like I would go to their website and remember to cancel it. What would happen is I would, you know, forget to account for that $2.99, and it would just pull money from me for like a year until I went through and just very meticulously, probably when I was doing taxes or whatever, went through all of banks, like all of my Fold card statements, like my debit card statements, and like look through it, all the charges, and I'd be like, what the heck is this little random charge? And then it would take me 45 minutes to figure out what it was. If it wasn't just obviously like app movie edit or whatever, I can't remember. I already forgot. This was literally a couple of days ago. I already forgot what the name of it is. This is how big of a problem this is. So movie edit, monthly sub or something like that. Every once in a while, I'll get one that's just some random thing. It's just like a bunch of numbers and like a little reference to like some specific payment processor, and it's got nothing to do with the service. I remember I did this last year at tax time, and there were two things like that in my stuff. I can't remember how long it took me to actually figure it out. One of them was actually DigitalOcean, which is important because I really needed that one to keep running. Like my website is run on DigitalOcean hosting, but there was no indication that that's what it was. And I almost blocked it. Like I almost just went in and was just like, okay, I just want to block this payment. And that would have caused a big problem just because I didn't know what it was, and I don't have any clear way to manage this. But what's funny is that the Lightning apps and the stuff that I use is actually really great when I end up using Lightning, because I can manage really well with my wallets, and I can easily search my payment history and the notes that I'm making. I always just put in a little comment about, you know, what was going on in the payment, unless I'm just doing a zap, which is just obvious because it's always 1,000 sats. But it's actually helped me manage this a little bit better because I'm just much more comfortable with Bitcoin than I am dealing with bank statements and all this stuff. And it's always like a report, and I have to do it month by month. And God, I hate it. I hate it so much. It's such a nightmare. But the usability of having the subscription client side and have it built into this protocol standard, because imagine like Albi is one of the custodial wallets that I'm a big fan of. Let's say they have their own recurring payment standard and it goes to Albi, other Albi users. Well, that would be great for the context of that. Like, let's say they wanted to implement some sort of Patreon thing within Albi, except that I cannot then translate it if I then use my Breeze wallet or if I use Phoenix. And maybe I want it in those, or I don't want to put a whole lot of funds in Albi. I would rather manage it over Phoenix. I think those are the sorts of things where it's one of those clear primitives that you can have some additional thing on top of the recurring payment or the monthly, just like build out a request, a type of request on Bolt 12 or whatever it is, in order to set up a subscription or set up a recurring relationship between you and this other node, but that it's all easy to manage in one place and standardized. And it can be absolutely dirt simple in the form of standardization, but the subscription model is too huge. The recurring payment setup and design and market, I guess, is probably the better word. The market for that is too huge, I think, to just leave it to a bunch of disparate. You kind of end up in this situation where, oh, Cash App doesn't send it to PayPal and PayPal won't send to Venmo sort of thing, where everybody's a walled garden. Well, it's like this feature doesn't work, or there's no dedicated conversation between these two things because there's not an underlying recurring payment thing at the protocol. So there's a really long tangent to kind of explain why I think some of the features do need to happen at the protocol layer. There needs to be some of those base primitives that you can then build on top of. And in the context of Lightning, I really think subscriptions, recurring payments, is a huge one. And in the context of a Bitcoin node, it's shortcutting. It's getting you to an operating wallet. I mean, granted, you can do that now. You can use a wallet today. Like, you can boot it up and use it while it's syncing in the background. But the thing is it doesn't, everything looks like it's pending. It doesn't act as if you have a live wallet that is in sync with the network when you could do that. You could, you know, bootstrap a UTXO set, start doing light client Neutrino filters, do the block headers, and then work backward to essentially ensure that everything that you're doing is fully sovereign and has the entire history of Bitcoin behind it. Anyway, this was a really cool development. I just thought it was neat, and it's been a long time coming for this sort of thing to be standardized, and I think it's a big step forward that, again, will look like it's more in the background. But it's kind of like, actually, I think a good example is, and this example I think is far more impactful to the overall operation, but I think it's a decent example, is that we used to save a wallet.dat file instead of just a seed. And if that wallet.dat file was out of date, if you generated a bunch of addresses after you had backed up the wallet.dat file, well, then that might not necessarily have been in the .dat file, and you could just lose any funds sent there because you were generating private keys continuously. And so a master private key was set so that you could easily recover or recreate all of the addresses, all of the individual private keys for each of the addresses that you have ever received payment to by just copying over your seed. So there was a standardized way for generating and moving around all of the key generation tools. And I would say that something like Assume UTXO, and maybe more specifically UTXO, is a good way to think of, is a better comparison to that example. But it's these more standardized and more concrete ways to take an entire instance, a state of the Bitcoin validation, and move it to a different location or share it with someone else and not have to redo that work before you get back up and running. Like, I think this could be a really, really big thing for when a node crashes. And I don't mean that in the sense that, like, the node software crashes, but that you have it running on Linux and Linux crashes. God forbid, I've had to deal with a lot of Linux crashing and hardware bugs very recently with my AI machine. It's a perfect example of my node could go down, and imagine I tried to boot it back up and the hard drive has a corruption on it or something, and I have to start back from zero. Well, imagine I had a simple way to kind of build in a Assume UTXO style backup or a UTXO sort of thing, and I could just spin right back up and start from where I went off. And if the reference client has to still go back and redo all of that work, that's fine, but I don't have to experience it, right? It doesn't have to interrupt the way that I'm operating with Bitcoin. And particularly from a more service provision and business standpoint, I think this is a huge deal. Honestly, I think anything that simplifies and speeds up the experience is really valuable. And I think it's been a little bit underserved from the context of the user or the people who want to utilize the Bitcoin client software. So it's cool to see stuff like this, you know, come to fruition. Shout out to James O'Byrne for, you know, putting in the 4 years worth of work and getting this out there. And also shout out to Shinobi for putting the article together, explaining it, and doing the thing that Shinobi does a very good job at, just because I haven't kept up with it very well, so I didn't even realize it had been merged. That's cool, and so I thought I'd share it with you guys, and hopefully you get something out of it. A huge thank you to CoinKite, to Nodeless, and to Fold, and the Fold debit card for sponsoring this show, making it so I can do this, and dig down the Bitcoin Audible, dig down the Bitcoin and the AI rabbit hole, and try to learn as much as I can and make it accessible to you guys. Honestly, I love what I do, and without them, I wouldn't be able to just keep doing it. And a way that you guys can support the show is actually by checking them out, by just going to the links right there in the show notes, and it matters. It makes a difference. So thank you guys for using my links and getting discounts. Getting discounts and free sats. Seriously, how is that even? You get discounts and you get free sats and it helps me. I don't know, it feels like cheating. Anyway, I will catch you guys on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. Thank you guys so much. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. Be yourself. Everybody else is already taken. Oscar Wilde.